77, afterwards, the first one that actually had a microprocessor. Remember, we're talking about 1970, the first microprocessor wasn't invented, the 4004, which was just barely a microprocessor, until 74, and the 6502 wasn't around until 76. So we had to do something other than microcomputers at that time. Is this too much detail?
No.
Okay. So anyway, we in the first computer space, we didn't really have mass bombs available, so we actually created the shapes of the rocket ships by having diode matrices in which on the printed circuit board we had a 1 to 16 scanner, 1 to 16 bit decoder along the bottom, and at every place that you wanted the unit to be bright, you inserted diodes. And so you'd actually look at the board and you could see the outlines of the chips and diodes. You guys have one of these there? Had it? Anyway, it was kind of an interesting design. All of the motion objects were actually counters that overflowed. And how we created motion was we'd have one set of counters that created sync, horizontal and video. But then for the active elements, we would have another set of counters that matched the count of the sync generator with one exception. They had a preset. They were either preset to 0, 1, or 2. And we made the sync generator so that it was always reset or preset at 1. And so if you wanted an object to go backwards, or to the left, you'd preset to 0. And so compared to the sync generator, it would slip one pixel per frame. If you wanted to move at 1 pixel per, or 60 pixels per second, which is the maximum speed you can do at that time. And if you wanted to stay still, you just preset it to 1. If you wanted to go forward, you preset it to 2. And you do that in both the horizontal and vertical. And that's how we got our horizontal and vertical motion, using only 16 bits of count. So that was what was the core subject of the Bushnell patent, the things that really were the foundation technology of the video game. So computer space was designed, and now I wanted to get it funded and marketed. And I found out that there was a company in the area. I was living in Santa Clara, California at the time, in Mountain View, called Nutting Associates. Nutting Associates built a quiz game using a slide, basically a film strip, asking questions and giving you a score for some answers. And it had about run its course, so the company was actually in trouble when I went to them. I didn't know it at the time, but they were sort of on the edge of bankruptcy. I went there and I said, hey, would you like to produce this game? And they said, sure, let's do it. And they said, oh, by the way, we just laid off our chief engineer. Do you want to come work for me for us as the chief engineer to get this in production? Because we don't know anything about this technology. I said, sure. And so I took the amount of salary that I was getting at Antec, and I doubled it. And I said, I need that to go. And plus, they said, okay, fine. And I said, plus I'm going to need a car. And I said, okay, fine. And all of a sudden, you know, I went from an $825 a month engineer to $1,600 a month, which was really big money in those days. And I was happy. And plus I had a royalty deal on computer space. And I got it into production. But no sooner did we get it into production than I started seeing the Nutting, that all was not really well with Nutting. And they didn't know how to market. They didn't know how to sell. They didn't really know how to manufacture. But the game was a modest success. We went to a trade show, And the machine earned a lot of money in college campuses and various places, but it was, you know, used Newton's second law and conservation momentum. You had to reverse the rocket ship and fire and things like that. And it was a little baffling to the drunk with a beer. All my friends loved it, but all my friends were engineers. I think we sold 2,000 of the units at $1,200 a piece. And we decided it was time to build another game. I had a whole bunch of other ideas. But I could see that there was some real problems with nutting, and so I said, you know, I'll do another game for you, but basically you've got to give me a piece of the company and a much more significant role in management, because I just think there's some mistakes being made. And companies are in trouble, get in trouble for real reasons, usually because there's management issues. And they said, no, Nolan, you're a good engineer, you just stay in the engineering and we'll run the company. And we'll give you an option on what I consider to be a very paltry amount of stock. And under their management, I didn't have any confidence in stock anyway. And so I said, I'll think about it. And I thought about it long enough to call up my friends in Chicago, and I had a little bit of a reputation at the time, and got a contract with Bally Manufacturing to build the second game. And they agreed to pay so much a month in engineering costs. And so now I had my royalties and the cash flow from this contract, and I said, okay, time to set up my own shop. And so the engineering had its own place, and we got a garage shop, 1,000 square feet, whether we needed it or not, on Scott Boulevard. Roll up door in the back, one office in the front, and a coffee machine. We were in business. At that point, we decided that we'd take a contract from manufacturing a design job from Nutting as well. And so we had two contracts, and that was more than I could handle. So I decided I was going to hire the best and the brightest and the cheapest guy I knew, and that was Al Alcorn. And Al had worked for me at Ampeg. He had just graduated from Berkeley, and he was on a work-study program where he worked at Ampeg for 6 months, then pursued a degree at Berkeley. And it turns out that they worked in teams, sort of a tag team, and they were my assistants. And Alcorn was one, and Bristow was the other. And so they were tag team, and they were my first employee. So anyway, Alcorn comes on board, and I show him the technology, and he says, man, this stuff is kind of complex. There were a lot of chips. There were a lot of chips in those days on these units. And so I said, well, I'll give you the simplest project to get you up to speed on this stuff. And so I made up a project and I said it was from General Electric, and it was just to do a real simple game. The simplest game I can think of, which is the Pong game. Now, there's been a lot of talk and controversy about Magnavox, you know, Ralph Baer and the Magnavox patent. And the reality is that I did in fact see the Magnavox product probably somewhere around that time. But it was the Magnavox game that they had was a failure at the time. And so the last thing I wanted to do was copy a failure. I saw this as a training project for Alcorn. I never thought that it would have commercial results. First of all, it was a two-player game, and only, and everybody said, you know, you have to have a single-player game. You can have a two-player game as an adjunct to a single-player, but a two-player game, there's never been one that's been successful. So Al prototyped it up and got the ball moving, got the paddles on the screen, and the ball just went straight back and forth in the paddles. And I said, well, we've got to get some angle isolation in here. So why don't we structure it so that when the ball hits the top edge of the paddle, it'll bounce up. If it hits the middle, it'll bounce straight across. If it hits sort of in between, it'll have a slightly more oblique angle. The minute that algorithm was put into the game was fun. And we found ourselves liking to play it over and over and over again. And this was never, you know, this was totally unsuspected for us. And this was in the fall, this was about the fall of 1971, I think. And so we built a couple of them up, and we put the put one in a metal case, and I had a party at my house, and we took it home, hooked it up to the TV set, and literally we couldn't get people out of the living room at night. I mean, they were playing it over and over and over and over and over and over again. And probably about 2 or 3 o'clock, I had to beat everybody out so we'd get some sleep. So we decided to test it at Handicap Tavern, and yes, the story is true. We had one of these little coin mechs pasted on the side of the unit that was, I think, we stole from the city ride. And it had a very small quarter receptacle, and filled it up in a day. And Al says, well, how do we know if we've got a success? I said, if we do $10 a day, it's a huge success. If it does $20 a day, it'll be a record breaker. It was doing $35 and $40 a day. So, gave you bar the door.